Welcome to another podcast in the series by the Kansas Policy Institute. I'm Paul Sutar, your host, and today we have Dave Traubert, president of the Kansas Policy Institute. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Paul.
Today, we're going to talk about an analysis of a recent district court decision on the Gannon versus State of Kansas on education funding. That sounds like it can get a little complicated, Dave.
Oh, it is, we're into measuring school finance litigation in the decades now in Kansas. This recent ruling from the district court, they ignored a long list of facts that disprove school districts' contentions, and they may even have ignored the state Supreme Court's order that adequacy is to be determined on whether outcomes are being met. They basically dusted off their original decision, which was rejected by the state Supreme Court the first time they put it out, and added some new legal jargon in an attempt to justify their original action. Basically, they arrived at what we think is little more than a political decision. But, you know, maybe we should go back and revisit the state Supreme Court ruling to understand that.
Right, and this has a lot of history. I wanted to mention one other quick thing, that education funding in the United States across the board has been up steadily and very steeply since basically the end of World War II. But in the 1970s, it started increasing at even a sharper rate, coincidentally, and maybe not so coincidentally, with a spate of lawsuits by individuals and school districts seeking even more and more and more funding. And Kansas hasn't been immune to that. Kansas has had its share, especially since 2001.
That's right. And the ruling that we're talking about now is in Gannon v. State of Kansas. The original lawsuit was filed in November of 2010. And the basic contention was that when the legislature reduced base state aid in the recession, that they violated the agreement that had been reached in Montoy v. State of Kansas, where the legislature, as a result of that, put funding increases in place. And so, you know, let's talk a little bit about what the Supreme Court said on Gannon, because that's the key to understanding what the lower court is doing now.
Right, and you're talking about the decision back in March of last year, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. This would be in March of 2014, the state Supreme Court issued what many people believe was a monumental shift in how courts will look at adequacy of funding, not just in Kansas, but across the country. And one of the main reasons is, for the first time, they said total spending is not the touchstone for determining adequacy. It sounds like a common sense to most people. But basically what the court said was outcomes matter more than total spending. Not that spending doesn't matter, but outcomes come first. And that's not been the case. It's always been just about the money.
Some people would say that's a cynical view, but I've looked at some of these numbers myself, and the performance for public schools, and again, Kansas is no exception, has been relatively flat. And there are people who would say, when you compare what kids actually come out of school knowing today compared to decades ago, they'd say it's not even flat, it's decreased. So you're right. I mean, this is a fundamental change from looking just at funding to actually considering the outcome. What are our children actually learning in school?
Right. And they also said that obviously money matters, and there is an adequacy component. The state is required, or the legislature is required, to provide adequate funding in order to meet these ROSE standards, which is the new test. But they said when you're looking at money, there were two unique things that were in that Supreme Court decision that really are going to have a long-term effect. The first thing is dealing with cost studies. All the previous rulings in Montoy 1, Montoy 2, and everything prior to that have been based on cost studies, where the focus is supposed to be what does it actually cost to provide this, and then you have to provide that amount of money. Here's what the court said. actual costs from studies are more akin to estimates than the certainties that the panel, being the lower court, suggested. In other words, what they said was the court ruled on two issues. They ruled first on the equity of distribution, and they said the state wasn't following its own formula, and they needed to fix that. On adequacy, how much are schools receiving? Is it enough? They said that the lower court had not followed the right test. They sent adequacy back to the lower court. That's why it's in the district court now. And they said the test you have to provide is, first, are they achieving the outcomes set forth in the Rose standards? And then, when you're looking at the money, actual costs are more akin to estimates. They're not certainties. They also said, and I'm paraphrasing this, base state aid is not the magic number. That's been the focus. Are they getting what's the number of base state aid, which many people actually think that's all that schools get. The truth is it's only about a third of what schools get. Here's what the court said on what money counts. Quote, funds from all available resources, including grants and federal assistance, should be considered. Then they went on to say state monies invested in the Kansas Public Employees Retirement System, CAPERS, may also be a valid consideration because a stable retirement system is a factor in attracting and retaining quality educators. So you don't do it. The court said outcomes first. When you look at the money, you have to count it all, not just the base state aid, and you cannot base it on a cost study because that is more of an estimate than the certainties. So that was what the state Supreme Court said in March. And then they put it back to the lower court, and the lower court comes out then December, the end of the year, December 30th, I think, with their decision where, as we said at the beginning of the podcast, they basically ignored all of this. They dusted off their original ruling, added a few more things, increased the number for inflation, and said, there you go.
Right. Well, and you make some really good points here that I think most of our listeners will really identify with. I mean, the shift from just is it enough money with you may talk about this a little bit later, a focus on the Augenblick and Myers study, which was proven to have some really serious flaws in it. The shift away from that to an outcomes first, I think that's what every parent wants. When I used to send my kids off to school, they're all grown and have kids of their own now, but my kids don't do this either. They don't send their kids out the door and say, okay, honey, go spend some taxpayer money. No, they tell the kids, you know, go to school, you know, pay attention to your teacher, learn, study hard. You know, that parents want their kids to achieve. It's about achievement. It's not about spending or not spending. And, you know, the other thing that really struck me, and I've studied this for years, is about the spending. So many people only talk about just the base state aid. I was just looking at a legislative post-audit report on the Kansas City, Kansas School District, and their total spending per pupil is over $17,000 per student. That's a far cry from the roughly $4,000 that most people, you know, think we're spending on education, which is just the base state aid.
It is, and that's you know, we've done a number of public opinion surveys across the state of Kansas, and the plurality, the number one response is people believe that schools are getting less than $4,000 from the state and less than $6,000 overall, when in truth, the average this year will be $13,268. They get a lot more money, and parents, naturally, if they are told this is all that we're receiving, then it's understandable that parents would say, well, then we should raise more money. But the courts, you know, we need to continue to make a clear distinction, because a lot of citizens and some legislators, I would add, say that, you know, the courts are getting involved in things that they shouldn't. And that I would have to agree with that up until the state Supreme Court ruling on Gannon. the state Supreme Court made some really wise decisions and in saying outcomes matter. And then when you look at it, here's what you have. You have to count it all. You have to look at everything. The lower courts, when they came back in December, they didn't even address whether students were achieving the outcomes. All they said was, well, these Rose standards have been around for a long time. Everybody knows what they mean. Well, you know what? They don't. And the proof of that is that districts admit that they don't know how to define or measure the Rose standards.
Tell us more about that. I'm really curious about that. That seems like a pretty telling admission.
It is. You know, I served on the K-12 Student Achievement and Efficiency Commission over the last 6 months, and we heard testimony from individual school districts, from the Kansas Association of School Boards, and others who asked us to recommend that the legislature help define the Rose standards. So there's no question they don't know how to define and measure these capacities, which to me and a lot of other attorneys, and I'm not one, but attorneys have said, you know, that means that you don't have a basis to claim that you don't have enough funding to meet those standards. It's like saying I don't have enough gas to get home, and you ask, well, where's home? I don't know, but I don't have enough gas to get there. It's just really eye-opening that, first of all, they admit it. Credit and kudos to the school districts for admitting they don't know how to do this. And the lower court knows this. This is not a secret. But they say they ignored what the Supreme Court said and said, go spend another $550 million minimum.
Now, that's a I know this is a political hot potato, this whole subject, because it's something that has to be dealt with. There are a huge number of people who depend on this spending, this taxpayer money in order to fund their job. And that's just cut to the chase. In a lot of ways it is. And I have nothing against teachers. I have family members who are teachers. It just really makes me wonder what's really going on that's causing what some would say are political decisions about school funding. How is that happening instead of it being based on real empirical, factual performance outcome basis?
Well, you touched on it right there, Paul. It's political pressure. I don't mean Democrats and Republicans. I mean pressure placed on people to do things for reasons other than what's in the best interest of students. Now, I don't believe anybody in education gets up and says, let's go waste money, or I don't care what the kids need, I want to do this. That's not how people think, but that doesn't change the facts of what takes place. We heard, again, back on the K-12 Commission, we heard districts acknowledge that they could spend less money, they could save money, and in fact ask for a number of opportunities that would help them save money. But they made it very clear, don't make us do it. Let us do it if we want to, because they get pressure from, say, the local merchant. Buy from me, even though it's going to cost more. Or they don't want to for reasons internally, for kind of the adults in the system. Another great example is every school district has its own payroll system. And we were talking about, questions were asked of a district, are you looking at that? And the superintendent admitted, sure, we're looking at it. But he said, we're getting resistance from the staff. They don't want to do it. Well, regardless of how something is rationalized, if you are spending more money on something than you need, you're consciously diverting money from instruction. And to get, so yes, it's supposed to be giving money that districts need to educate kids. I can't name one legislator who doesn't want to do that. But we do want to hold schools or government or whatever, any agency, city, local, state agency, they need to be held accountable. But the problem here is that there's resistance within the system, and it's so endemic that even people within the school system who want to do something different are under pressure not to, to the point where they can't even publicly acknowledge it because there's pressure. There's pressure from the local school board, or the local school board gets pressure from local merchants. And nobody's trying to consciously undermine the education of students and improve their achievement, but that's the impact.
Right, right. I know when I was looking at the legislative post-audit report done in 2013 on the Kansas City District, there were just some stunning things in there. They're spending, this was in 2013 or 2012, $17,000 plus per pupil, and it is one of the poorest performing districts in the state. But when they looked at the efficiency of the district, they determined that the district could, with almost no impact, save an estimated $4.6 million annually, and then another $3.5 million with some minor impact to the district. Just simple things that a legislative post-audit group found fairly quickly in looking over one of the state's districts. Now, one of the things that I know from reporting on this in the past is that back the last time there was this big push for increased funding, the 2010 Commission was created to partly monitor how that extra money was spent, and there were supposed to be efficiency audits, and they were not required. They were done on a voluntary basis. Very few schools did it, but they consistently found opportunities to save significant money. One of the things that came out of that 2010 commission, a minority member on the commission, a CPA by the name of Steve Iliff, wrote a minority report, and one of the big recommendations he made was, let's set a standard way to measure and account for the money schools are spending so we can actually compare districts. Has that actually been done yet?
Well, it's been done, and it's the system. Actually, the system has existed for a long time, and the Department of Education has an accounting manual that says how it's supposed to be done. The problem is that the information that parents are given, that legislators are given, doesn't conform to that. They're only given partial information, so people think we're not, you know, we're getting apples and oranges because we're getting different types of information. It comes down to that there's a lot of people who don't want citizens to have the full picture, and so they're given partial information that is impossible to compare. You know, I know we're running tight on time here, Paul. Let me just recap, because this gets all this information that we've talked about. As you said, every legislative post audit since for years has found schools to be operating inefficiently. It's well known now. Districts admit we don't know how to measure these standards. They don't know how to measure the ROSE capacities. And so for a court to ignore, basically thumb its nose at the state Supreme Court and ignore their directives and follow these flawed cost studies that are proven to have been produced to produce higher inflated numbers, and ignore that we don't know how to measure the outcomes, and ignore that districts are continuing to be inefficient, is a travesty. I mean, and this is nothing about helping kids. This is just all this political pressure that's applied to the system, and we need to change that focus. Hopefully, when the Supreme Court hears the appeal from the state, a lot of this information is going to be put forth, and we look forward, in fact, to having that and getting this record straight, because the district court on Gannon just went rogue on the state Supreme Court.
I sure hope they get it sorted out. I look at my grandkids going to school here in Kansas, and I want them to have a better shot.
Absolutely. My granddaughter is in kindergarten now, and we have the same concern.
Well, thank you, Dave. Thanks for spending time talking about this. We'll bring you more in the near future.
Thanks, Paul.